Welcome to this session on the Road of Wisdom, session 14. We're going to be continuing here with a series, this little mini series of the Teaching of Wisdom, part 3. This will be the final and last part of this little mini series. So what we've been doing is in each of these sessions in part 1, part 2, and now in part 3, we're going to look at several topics in the book of Proverbs and see what it teaches about wisdom in that area of life. The first one we're going to look at in this session is work and employment. The book of Proverbs treats work as far more than just a means to earn money. Work is one of the main arenas in which wisdom, character, foresight, self-control, and faithfulness can become publicly visible. Proverbs also describes labor or work as being highly moral component to it, so that we can apply wisdom in our everyday vocations. And our attitude toward our work reveals whether or not we are living by wisdom or foolishness. Now, Proverbs begins to teach about work and employment with one of its most memorable images or pictures, by drawing upon the ant. In chapter 6, verses 6 through 8, it says, "Go to the ant, O lazy one. Watch its ways and become wise, because it has no leader, overseer, or ruler, yet it prepares its bread in the summer and gathers its food in the harvest." The ant is something we're supposed to look at and gain wisdom from. Just a little tiny ant. It says because it's tiny, but it has wisdom because it acts at the time it should. It doesn't wait for a crisis to arrive. It doesn't wait for hunger or winter or someone to come along and to tell them, "Hey, buddy, the clock is ticking. Get a move on it." The wisdom of the ant is in its foresight as much as it is in its decisiveness. In employment, this imagery of the ant teaches us the value of self-management and self-motivation. A good worker is a worker who doesn't need to be watched constantly, doesn't need to be reminded endlessly, or doesn't need to be frightened or threatened into taking action. Like the ant, the wise person sees the opportunity and then uses it or engages in it. And this is a very great example in ordinary life. For example, if you have like a student who will begin to write a paper for an assignment in their class early rather than waiting until the last minute. Or perhaps maybe a person who works at an automobile garage, that they organize their tools before the shop opens so that they don't have to go looking for them when they're on the job. Or maybe a business owner who puts away part of the profit during months where they have a lot of revenue. All these people are living by ant-like wisdom. In contrast, the lazy person would say something like, "Well, there'll be time later." But the ant would quietly reply and say, "Later is prepared for now." A tiny problem may not look, dangerous or may not look that urgent in the moment, but if ignored long enough, every problem usually can become a major issue. And such is what often happens with procrastination. Proverbs also insists that diligent work has a positive result. It tends toward abundance. In Proverbs chapter 10, verse 4, it says, "The poor person works with an idle palm, but a diligent hand makes one rich." And this is not like a reductionistic claim that every poor person is lazy, nor is it that every rich person is diligent and righteous in their work. Remember, Proverbs often states general principles is how life tends to work out, not universal guarantees. The point is that idleness has consequences. and diligence creates conditions in which prosperity can occur. The palm or the hand is used in the proverb as a symbol of agency. They represent what a person does. Similarly, there's another proverb, Proverbs chapter 12, verse 11, that says, "The one who works his land will be satisfied with food." Land could represent a literal field, like if you work in agriculture, but the principle can be applied more broadly. Every person has some land in their life that they can cultivate. Maybe they have a certain skill in a trade, or they have a property that they can manage, or they're an overseer and they have people that they can help to organize and to set before them the responsibilities. We're supposed to work in the field that we have, metaphorically speaking. And the warning about chasing sort of like fantasies or, you know, sort of ignoring our faithful duties is also behind the scenes in this proverb, because this is about taking responsibility. We need to work the land when we should, and if we do so, we will then reap the benefit. We'll be satisfied by what it provides to us. In Proverbs chapter 14, verse 23, the warning is also sharpened here by verse 23 saying, "In all hard work there is profit, but mere words from the lips surely lead to poverty." Now, this is a very needed proverb in a world, modern world like ours, that's full of everybody talking about plans that they're making or slogans or, you know, self-promotions. You know, Proverbs doesn't denounce talking and forming plans. It distinguishes planning from just mere words. A person may talk endlessly about future business opportunities, a better job that's just around the corner, a new skill they want to learn. But talk alone doesn't plant crops, doesn't write reports, doesn't build houses, doesn't fix engines, doesn't care for patients, and doesn't pay bills. This proverb is not like anti-dreams, it's anti-delusions. Dreams may come true, but only through taking disciplined action. Proverbs honors excellence in work as well. In Proverbs chapter 29, verse 22, verse 29, it says, "Do you see a man skilled in his occupation? He will stand in the presence of kings." This proverb is saying your skill matters. Your abilities matter. The wise worker doesn't just merely show up to his job. He works to grow in his competence at his job. He studies his craft, or he studies his area of work. He accepts correction to get better at it. He learns from the mistakes he makes, and he becomes a dependable worker. The image from this proverb of standing before kings is meant to teach us that pursuing excellence in our work opens doors. A skilled carpenter, a teacher, nurse, or engineer, or a farmer, or a manager, or an artist, they may begin at entry-level work, but if they seek to master their trade or their field of work, then it will open up new opportunities for their work to carry more weight and have a greater impact. Consider two blacksmith apprentices who work together in the same workshop. One does only what is required of them and often complains a lot when being told how to do things better. The other is inquisitive, asks questions, likes to clean the tools after they're done, watches the master's technique very carefully, and practices more than they're required to. Years later, which apprentice do you think is entrusted with the most important jobs at the blacksmith's place? Proverbs would not call that luck. It would call it applying wisdom in one's work. Yet Proverbs does not only praise diligence in one's work, it also actually mocks and ridicules laziness so that we understand and even feel the absurdity of it. In Proverbs chapter 19, verse 24, it says, "The lazy person buries his hand in the dish. Indeed, he will not even bring it back to his mouth." The picture here is, it's almost comical what's being described. The food is within the reach of the lazy person. He reaches down his hand. He places it in the food dish, but he's too lazy to even lift the food out of it back to his mouth to enjoy. As dramatic as this sounds, this humor exposes a serious truth. Laziness is not merely taking it easy and resting too much. Yes, rest is good and it's necessary for everyone. But laziness is a settled refusal in one's heart to do what life requires. In Proverbs chapter 24, verses 30 to 34, the property of the lazy person provides a little bit of a different picture of this same idea. Here's what it says, "I passed by the field of a lazy person and by the vineyard of a person lacking sense. And behold, it was all overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with weeds and its stone wall had fallen down. When I noticed, I paid attention. I observed and I learned this lesson. Just a little more sleep, a little more slumber, a little more folding of the arms to lie here. And your poverty will come like a robber and your needs like an armed man." The context here describes this neglected field and vineyard that has weeds and thistles and a broken wall. Well, the field didn't collapse in one dramatic moment. It decayed and crumbled slowly due to neglect. No single day of laziness seems fatal in itself, but compounding each day, another weed, another loose stone, another unrepaired gap in the wall. And before long, the whole place is in disarray. Employment and work, you know, doing work, they work the same way. A reputation is not usually destroyed in a single morning where you miss a deadline. It is eroded by successive missed deadlines, by careless communication habits, and by repeated excuses. Proverbs also explains that our work is tied to one of our most basic human needs, the need for food. In Proverbs chapter 16, verse 26, it says, "A laborer's appetite labors for him, for his mouth urges him on." This proverb observes that personal needs often motivate people to action. Hunger, shelter, family responsibility, and the desire to live with dignity press a person toward faithful labor. In this sense, one's appetite labors or works for them because it becomes an inner motivation. The need to eat gives work its urgency, and the desire to enjoy food gives work purpose. This does not mean that poverty is good or that physical hunger should be romanticized or anything like that. Proverbs is not praising deprivation, but it's recognizing that a need in life can awaken initiative, discipline, and responsibility. Hunger can teach us that life requires work. Work is not merely a way to gain wealth, it's a way to sustain life and serve others. At the same time, this proverb should never be used to excuse the neglect of the poor, because some people do lack food, and they lack basic needs because of maybe illness or oppression or disaster or disability or just lack of opportunity. Scripture calls people to mercy and generosity toward those in need. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 26 teaches that need can motivate a person to work hard, but it does not erase the duty to help those whose needs exceed their strength or responsibility. And this leads us to our next topic that we're going to look at, what wisdom teaches. What does wisdom teach about social justice? The book of Proverbs is sometimes read as a handbook on how to have personal success. You know, you work hard, you think before you speak, you avoid hanging out with fools, you manage your money wisely, Yet Proverbs also teaches that God's wisdom has a vision for society as a whole. In Proverbs, justice is not merely a political slogan. It's the practical shape of people in the public life living with the fear of Yahweh. It's people using money, power, speech, the court system, business, and their influence in godly ways. The foundation of God's justice is human equality. In Proverbs chapter 22, verse 2, it says, "The rich and the poor have this in common. Yahweh is the one who created them all." This proverb does not pretend that poverty and wealth offer the same life experience. What it is doing is it's acknowledging the reality of both groups of people and then placing them under the greater unified truth. They both owe their existence to the same creator. The wealthy person who sees only distinctions in status, lifestyle, or class is missing wisdom, because every person bears this God-given dignity. And therefore, Proverbs calls people to advocate for the weak and the poor in society. Proverbs chapter 31, verses 8 and 9 say, "Open your mouth for those who have no voice, for the legal claim of all defenseless people. Open your mouth, judge with righteousness, and defend the cause of the afflicted and needy person." Justice is not satisfied when powerful people merely avoid doing harm to individuals that are weaker than them. Wisdom requires people to speak up for them. And justice also entails not just depicting people who cannot effectively represent themselves in society, like the poor, the afflicted, the young, the outsider, those who are intimidated or who have are legally defenseless. But maybe a modern illustration could help if we think about perhaps a young child in school at an elementary school, and they're at a school hearing for an incident that happened, and their testimony gets overruled by an adult simply because they're a child. Or maybe there's a person in your housing complex who is being evicted due to a disability that they have. Or maybe an elderly person is being solicited by predatory businesses. Proverbs says the wise person doesn't just shrug it off and say, "Oh, well, that's not my problem." Wisdom opens its mouth and defends the weak. Proverbs also teaches that how a person treats the poor reflects how they treat God. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 31 says, "The person who oppresses the poor taunts the one who created him, but the person who shows favor to the needy glorifies him." This is a striking theological claim here in Proverbs. Oppression is not only cruelty toward a human being, it is actually showing contempt for the Creator. And conversely, if you show kindness to the needy, it's actually an act of worship that glorifies the Creator. A person may sing hymns at church and maybe give speeches about morality or appear to have an upstanding, respectable character. But Proverbs asks a harder and deeper question. How does the person respond when someone weaker needs them? This same idea appears also in Proverbs chapter 19, verse 17. It says, "The one who shows favor to a poor person lends to Yahweh, and he will repay him according to his good work." This image here is shocking, because what it does is it places our generosity here toward a poor person. It places God, so to speak, as a debtor to us. The point's not that God lacks anything or really truly owes us anything, but that he is personally identifying with the mercy and generosity that we're showing to the poor, and he takes notice of it, and he will reward us. It says that he will repay us according to our good work. It could just be a small act. Maybe it's a meal. Maybe it's a ride. Maybe you pay a bill for someone. Maybe you have a conversation with someone who's hurting. These things may look insignificant in the eyes of the world, but Proverbs says that Yahweh sees it much differently. The wise person learns that compassion and generosity are never wasted. By contrast, Proverbs also warns against becoming deaf to the suffering of others. In Proverbs chapter 21, verse 13, it says, "The one who closes his ear to the cry of the poor, he will also cry out and not be answered." This proverb teaches that there is a moral reciprocity in the way we respond to human need. A person may ignore the poor today because the suffering of the poor feels inconvenient to them or it's too costly for them to address at that time. But one day, we may find ourselves in need and discover that our own cries are met with silence by God. Social justice, then, is not just sentimentality. It is wisdom that is shaped by compassion, recognizing that those who need mercy, that when mercy is shown, they will then receive mercy. To receive mercy from Yahweh, one must be willing to show mercy to others. And Proverbs also connects social justice to both honest economic practices and concern for people who are taken advantage of. In Proverbs chapter 11, verse 1, it says, "Deceitful balances are an abomination to Yahweh, but a fair weight is his delight." In the ancient marketplace, buying and selling, merchants used scales and weights to measure goods when selling them or buying them. If your scale was dishonest, meaning it didn't accurately render the weight, you would be either cheating the buyer or the seller in order to get more for yourself, whether it's more money or profit or more product. And therefore, you might be giving less than you're promising or charging more than what is fair. The theft, though, was not visible. It was hidden, but it was still theft. And the proverb here is showing that Yahweh cares not only about the public, obvious forms of injustice, but also about unseen systems that pervert honesty and that affect our daily life. And therefore, justice includes all these different hidden mechanisms of exchange in the workplace and in the marketplace, whether it's pricing, wages, contracts, the ways that we do measurements, loans, advertising, and all other business practices. A society cannot be righteous if its ordinary transactions are built on deception. Fairness is therefore not just a business concern, a business concern. It's a spiritual concern. Honest dealings give Yahweh delight because they reflect truth, they protect the vulnerable, and they build trust between people. In Proverbs chapter 29. Which talks about how social justice needs to attend to the rights and needs of the poor as well. It says, "A righteous person knows the legal claim of the poor. A wicked person does not understand this knowledge." The word "know" here means more than just being aware that these people are poor. The righteous person takes time to understand the situation of the poor, their rights, their vulnerabilities, and the way that they may be mistreated or ignored. By contrast, the wicked person may be very clever and powerful and successful in what he does, but he lacks moral understanding because he refuses to genuinely care about the poor. His ignorance is not just intellectual, it is a heart matter. He does not understand the poor because he has chosen not to see them. Together, these proverbs show us that justice is both societal and personal. It involves having honest systems, fair economic practices, and showing compassion to those who are most likely to be overlooked. Proverbs teaches that social justice is wisdom lived out in the community at large and in the nation. It begins by recognizing every person as God's creation, that there's a duty to protect the vulnerable, God demands that we have honest dealings in our courts and governments, and calling those with power and authority to speak for those without a voice. The wise life is never merely a private life. To walk wisely is to help build community where righteousness, mercy, and truth is the air that everyone breathes. The last topic we're going to look at is alcohol and substance abuse, or substance use, but we're going to talk about substance abuse. The book of Proverbs does not treat the overconsumption of alcohol and substance use slash abuse as just simply bad habits, but as a deficiency of wisdom, character, and judgment. The wise person learns how to navigate life, while addiction and substance dependence gradually take the steering wheel away from them. Proverbs does not present wine, as we're going to look at, or beer, as the only possible danger, as it places every use of alcohol into this same moral category. Instead, it warns that intoxication, indulgence, and dependency on substances can distort perception, drain one's financial resources, damage relationships, and muzzle our moral responsibility. In Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1, it says, "Wine is a mocker, beer is a loudmouth, and everyone who goes astray by them is not wise." This is a very vivid personification. Alcohol is pictured almost like a bad companion here who maybe first entertains you and then humiliates you. A mocker does not build reverence, humility, or teachability in a person. And a loudmouth does not produce peace, self-control, or use their words carefully. The wisdom in this proverb is that intoxicants are not just neutral substances, because once they begin to affect a person's ability to regulate and govern themselves properly, they easily lead to foolish behavior. A person would never invite one of their friends who is cruel or always badgering them or insulting them into their home. They may nevertheless invite that same type of spirit into their mind through drunkenness or use of mind-altering substances. Proverbs warns the reader to judge the use of substances not by their promises, but by their results. Proverbs also connects substance abuse with a degrading lifestyle. In chapter 23, verses 20 to 21, it says, "Do not be among those who drink too much wine, or with gluttonous meat eaters, for the drunkard and the glutton will become impoverished, and drowsiness wears rags." The point is not simply that, you know, one bad night can empty a wallet, though that can happen. The deeper warning here is that repeated self-indulgence, even in things as like overeating food, that this can produce a whole atmosphere of decline in a person's life. The drunkard loses time, alertness, their own discipline, and opportunities in life. And the glutton, likewise, lacks restraint and also can suffer from similar ailments. Together, they represent this sort of appetite without any sort of wisdom. It's like a small leak that happens that slowly can drip faster and faster until a pipe bursts and the whole basement is flooded. The type of principle that's found here in Proverbs 23, verse 21, about becoming impoverished, that this goes way beyond like alcohol or overeating. It can be any type of recreational drug that just becomes financially and spiritually destructive. And these things, those who use these and are overcome by them should seek help immediately. A related proverb is Proverbs chapter 21, verse 17. It says, "The one who loves pleasure will become a poor person, and the one who loves wine and oil will not become rich." Here, this proverb is teaching that the one who loves pleasure, alcohol, and even oil here, like this is probably referring to olive oil, that it will become an economic burden in their life. They have a misplaced affection. And so the danger is not in having a drink or in enjoying rich food. It's in the inability of the person to escape from these desires. The person who loves pleasure it will then turn into financial ruin. And therefore, Proverbs teaches that what we repeatedly love, we end up funding. And that funding that we spend on it will eventually, you know, form who we are and the way we live. And therefore, the wise person doesn't just ask, you know, is this okay? It asks, if I do this, what kind of person is this going to make me? Now, perhaps the most dramatic portrait of alcohol or substance use and abuse appears in Proverbs chapter 23, verses 29 to 35. I'm going to read here, starting in verse 31. Do not look at the wine when it sparkles with red, when it gleams in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a serpent, and it poisons like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things, and your heart will speak perverse things. And you will become like one who lies down in the middle of the sea, or like one who lies down on the top of a ship's mast. They struck me, but I did not feel pain. They hit me, but I did not know it. When will I awaken? I will seek another drink. This image here is almost absurd. But that's kind of the point of this proverb. Addiction and overconsumption of alcohol and all other types of mind-altering substances, they can make danger feel almost normal. They can make a person be spiritually or kind of emotionally in a storm, but yet just completely numb to what's going on. The passage here ends with these chilling words that I will seek another drink. And that's the cycle of substance bondage, is that pain does not produce repentance when desire has captured one's will. Even wounds become insufficient warnings in life. Therefore, what Proverbs is teaching is that wisdom must intervene early before one's appetites and desires turn into addiction, and then they become the master of one's life. And Proverbs chapter 31 adds an important dimension to the ill effects here of alcohol specifically, and that is irresponsibility. In chapter 31, King Lemuel is warned that rulers must not give themselves to drink because they may forget what has been decreed and distort justice for the afflicted. Now it says give themselves to drink. This is about overconsumption. They must not give in to themselves to consume all that they desire to consume, because then their mind will become fuzzy and their memory will become fuzzy and they won't remember what they need to in order to enact justice as the ruler, as rulers should. So here the issue is not just personal ruin, it's public harm. And this could be like related to more than just a king or a ruler. It could be a parent, a pastor, a judge, an employer, a counselor, or any leader who carries other people's welfare in their hands. Intoxication clouds our judgment, and a clouded judgment can injure other people, especially the vulnerable. And so Proverbs links sobriety with being able to carry out justice. Those who have power must keep their minds clear enough to speak up for those who have no voice, so that they are not taken advantage of and exploited. In Proverbs chapter 31, verses 6 and 7, it recognizes that strong drink can be given to the disheartened, or those who have, are experiencing bitter in their soul. And this is in the context of somebody who has suffering because of these emotional suffering. So it's not saying alcohol is inherently bad. But what it does is saying is that there is an improper way in which a person abuses alcohol. And therefore, it's not canceling in the warnings out. It's just clarifying what the warning is about. So the substance like alcohol can be used as sort of like something that's given in as merciful in one setting, but then as an escape and something to sort of like distract you with in another. Wisdom is found in discerning the difference between the proper way to use something and the improper way to use it. And therefore, Proverbs is not teaching some sort of reckless self-medication with alcohol. That's foolishness. It's rather teaching that compassion and sobriety must be governed by wisdom. And so in the end, Proverbs teaches that addiction is a wisdom issue because it concerns who you allow to be the master in your life. Who rules you? Is it wisdom or is it your appetites? Is it God's instruction or is it your cravings? Is it a long-term life well-lived or short-term pleasure and relief? Proverbs' answer is that we are not to be deceived by what things appear to look like. Do not be deceived by the sparkle of the wine in the cup. Do not walk with those who just normalize the excess of consumption. And do not let pleasure become our God. We must not wait until the serpent of alcohol or substances have bitten us and poisoned us to admit that there is danger there. And when the bondage has already begun, we must be wise enough to seek help, because wisdom is not proud. Wisdom is humble, and wisdom wants life. In our next session on the Road of Wisdom, we're going to look at the last section of the book of Proverbs and talk about the woman of strength. We'll see you then.